This episode of Discover ADN is brought to you by Born SQL and their product DB Snitch. DB Snitch is a once-off report service resulting in an in-depth examination of your existing database instances and recommendations to bring them up to industry standards, ensuring that your data is safe. DB Snitch gives you a comprehensive view of where your database currently stands, along with a customized game plan to get it to where it needs to be. Of course, Born SQL offers both on-site and remote support. Find out more at bornsql.ca/dbsnitch or by contacting Randolph West via email at info@bornsql.ca with the keyword discover in the subject line. Welcome to episode 14 of Discover ADN. My name is Jason Irwin, and I am the host of this program. The goal of Discover ADN is to learn more about the many creative, intelligent, and interesting people that use app.net to communicate with the world, as well as offer us a chance to attach a voice to the words and avatars we see flowing through our timelines. Want to be in the show or recommend somebody you think is interesting? Get in touch on app.net by sending a message to DiscoverADN. Today, I have the pleasure of talking with Olusei Shonaya, who goes by the name Olusei on app.net. He lives in the United States, is an animator, programmer, Formula One enthusiast, and also has the distinction of being devastatingly handsome. Please join me in welcoming Olusei to Discover ADN. Hello!
Hello, how are you?
I am doing very well, and you?
I'm doing fantastic, thank you.
Let's get right down to business. Can you tell us, when did you join app.net?
Surprisingly, the other day I was looking at my profile on Felix, the iOS client from Bill Kuhn. The phenomenal iOS client, I should point out, and it listed right there the exact date that I joined. So it's August 21st, 2012.
Okay. Can you tell us why you joined app.net?
I have this discomfort with the balance of power between individuals and corporations in Western society today. The balance, I feel, is shifting too far in favor of corporations. And we don't have the kind of agency over personal information, over our online accounts, that I would like to see. And I had I'd been disappointed with Facebook, and I had actually quit Facebook in 2010. And then I'd become more active on Twitter, but at the same time, through 2010, 2011, Twitter was starting to get more and more Facebooky. It seemed clear to me that inevitably they would clamp down on the service in the bid to create more advertising surface. So I was looking for some kind of social infrastructure that was more aligned with my own goals. I was very moved by Dalton's essay about the objectives of app.net, the ideals behind the service, and the notion of it as infrastructure rather than as a product. And so that spoke to me, and I decided that this was something worth investing in. So I checked it out.
You use your first name on app.net. Can you tell us, why do you do this? Why not use a pseudonym?
Well, in my case, my full name might as well be a pseudonym. First of all, nobody can pronounce it actually. Like, people always, you have to ask me, how do you actually say your name? So there's no real difference in my case. Yeah, I'm functionally anonymous, even with my real name, to most people in the West. So it makes no difference, really. And I've been using my real name online since about 1999 at this point. I'm not terribly concerned about my anonymity. I don't shy from the things that I say online are things that I tend to be comfortable with living the consequences of, even when they're outrageous or hostile or even inappropriate. But I also think that all of us, our identities are kind of fractal in that we display facets of ourselves in different environments. So the Olushay that exists on ADN is part of me, but not all of me. And I'm comfortable with you knowing that part as Olushay.
What would you like to see more of on app.net?
I would definitely like to see more non-client, non-alpha client software. So the whole appeal of app.net as an engineering product is that it is an infrastructure for social applications. And the idea that you can carry your social graph with you from application to application. So if you start using Fift, or you start using Sunlit, But whatever the storytelling application is, you start using that, all your followers are available to you, all the people you follow are available to you. So if any of them also use those applications, there are ways in which you can interact with them. I think that's interesting. The API offers opportunities for machine-only channels, so the potential for third parties to build applications on top of app.net that have nothing to do with the conversational stream that most of us think of as app.net first is incredibly exciting. I have some long-term ambitions in that area myself. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff I'd really like to see more of. I'd like to see more validation of that concept, of that ideal, that the social graph in and of itself is a sustainable product.
You mentioned that you have some ambitions with regards to app.net. Does this mean that you will be creating your own applications at some point?
Yes, I have. I'm working on a client, a traditional stream-based client currently, which I originally was hoping to get the first beta out in February, but my other responsibilities, day job and family, have made that impractical. Now I'm hoping that I can get it before WWDC so that people can get a chance to take a look at it. I have some very distinct, I think, ideas about ways to enhance interactions with the network at large, particularly in the areas of discovery. So it's not, and also a couple of interesting ideas around conversation, but primarily I have some really interesting thoughts, and some people have made some really interesting suggestions. Michael Fanta has some great ideas about photo discovery. So I would really like to build some of those things and, you know, see them be available out there and potentially broaden the conversation among client developers. I put something out that someone else says, oh, that's an interesting idea, and then develops a different take on it, and that influences and inspires someone else, and so on and so forth. So there's that, but I also have some ambitions that have nothing to do with the conversational stream. And yes, I hope to build that application in the next about 2 years or so.
Well, I certainly look forward to seeing what you create.
I look forward to creating it.
Let's change gears a little bit. Can you tell us, what do you like to be known for?
So this, I listened to the podcast and I've gleaned the structure of the podcast. I was anticipating this question and I had a chance to think about it a little bit. And I kind of have a two-pronged answer. On the one hand, I would like to be known for a couple of things. I have passions in animation, and I would like to actually develop and finish my animations and my animation software. And those are things I'd like to be known for. I'd like to be known as someone who's considered and fair and thoughtful and reasonable. But at the same time, I'd like to not be known. There's a certain beauty in anonymity. I dream of one day leaving the internet, right? And when I say leaving the internet, I'll talk about I delete every single social profile, every single, website account, just about everything that is a reflection of identity or some kind of anchor tied to my email address, something like that. Delete all of it and only need the internet to get public information, maps, GPS data, stuff like that. And just live on a boat off the coast of Morocco or something. I have these romantic notions about a kind of analog existence. And so I want to be known to accomplish some things, and then I kind of want to disappear after that and just be a legend. go out quietly, you know?
Do you think it's still possible to completely disconnect from the internet?
That's a really good question. In this day and age, increasingly, like, you can disconnect, but the question is whether you can remove all the information that exists about you. Like, I quit Facebook 4 years ago. I deleted my account. Well, you deactivate it, and then after 30 days, they say they will delete it. But did they? I have no way of knowing. You know, is my entire profile still there? Will I someday get an email from them saying, hey, your friends miss you, come back? And so I don't know. Like I said, it's a romantic notion. And perhaps it is that uncertainty that makes the notion appealing. You know, the idea that you can actually go off the grid after being such an enthusiastic part of it. It gives me the illusion of some measure of control, I suppose.
Well, if it is completely possible to disconnect from the internet, please send me a letter in the mail so that I can try it too when it comes time for me to retire. Let me ask you about another one of your passions. Earlier you were talking about animation. Could you tell us, how did you become interested in this topic?
I am a dyed-in-the-wool nerd. And when I was a little baby nerd, about 6 or 7 years old, my dad got our first PC. And it came with this application called Microsoft Show Partner. Most people have never heard of it. But it was a rudimentary presentation application. And it had a couple of little animation tools like wipes and dissolves. So I started playing around with those, and I got the animation bug there. And I got into game programming as I was turning into a teenager. But my real interest in game programming was programming animations, programmatic, you know, algorithmic generative animation. Of course, I've had to diversify my portfolio for reasons of livelihood, but that has remained the core of my passion. And I've taken courses, and I rediscovered my drawing about 7 years ago. I'd stopped drawing for a long time, and then I just realized that this is a part of me that I miss. So I draw, I paint a little bit, I draw digitally and paper, pen, and I try to animate every now and then. I have a couple of scripts and some character designs, and there's no bounded pressure, which may is a bad thing, but it's something that I would like to build up in a gradual, sustainable way so that it can become something that I do as a kind of signature, but without jeopardizing, you know, my family's financial security at any point, I guess.
Do you have a portfolio online where people can go and see your creative works?
Not yet. I'm just starting to build my online presence after many bunch of attempts, half-hearted stabs and things like that. This would be like my fifth website. But I do have an online presence at olushei.info. Mostly right now it's just a series of essays, one essay to a page. But I will be building that interactively over the coming years to include, I have some essays on animation there already. I'm going to start adding some breakdown pieces showing how I structure certain loops and sequences, and also talking about the building of software tools for animators. That's an area of a tremendous passion for me, because there's a perfect feedback loop there, that I'm an animator. I find that there are limitations in the tools that I look at. Again, my kind of animation is hand-drawn, two-dimensional, traditional. And it's not an area that's considered very sexy, this area of 3D bump-mapped, bloom, HDR, texture surfaces, or whatever. So there's not a lot of attention being given to these tools, but I still think there's a lot that can be done with machine vision and AI and a lot of interesting algorithms. So I kind of want to document that process of coming up with interesting new approaches, testing them, building them, and then using them to create animation and demonstrating how it improves workflow or output fidelity or offers resolution independence, you know, all kinds of things. So that's pretty exciting to me.
Are there any specific animated TV shows or movies where you have drawn inspiration from?
I know a lot of people hearing that I'm into animation and traditional animation would expect me to then say I'm like really into some anime, but I actually am not a huge fan of anime. I respect what they've done tremendously. The technical sophistication of anime has been leaps and bounds ahead of the contemporary Western studios for probably the last 25 years, easily, maybe 30. But at the same time, the stylistic conventions of anime, their loose relationship to the human anatomy, the jaw and physiology, they kind of bother me. They kind of get on my nerves. And so it's just not really my thing. I find myself drawn, right now I'm watching some older TV shows. There's a lot of TV animation that I enjoy. Right now I'm watching Young Justice, I'm catching up on that. I don't like everything about it, but there's a lot that I do like, where I'm seeing this kind of things coming full circle. The anime influence has come back to the West, and you're now seeing shows like Legend of Korra, you know, Avatar, The Last Airbender, that incorporate those Eastern and Western approaches, and yet have a distinctive voice. The new Thundercats reboot. Story got flat, but I like the animation. So there's a ton of stuff that I'm constantly watching. I watch a lot of animation. I don't finish every show. You know, a lot of shows that I think the writing is so terrible that after 3 or 4 episodes, I feel like I've gleaned everything I can from them. You know, I don't want to name names, but Generator Rex and Ben 10 are 2 examples. So yeah, I watch a lot of stuff. You know, I watch everything I can get my hands on. And some capture me because of their writing. And I think that's really an instructive point, that your visuals can be fantastic, but if your characters don't resonate, people won't stay.
Yeah, I think that's something we can both agree on. Yeah. All right. Well, this is a good opportunity for us to switch gears one last time as we come to the end of our program. And this is where we get to recommend some of the people that we find most interesting in our timelines. So could you share with us 3 people who you enjoy interacting with in your timeline, as well as why you enjoy interacting with them?
Sure. I had a little time to think about this. So the first person I'm going to recommend is Jonathan Durig. He's at Durig, D-U-E-R-I-G. And Jonathan is absolutely brilliant, incredibly talented. He's the creator of the Patter group chat interface on top of app.net. He's a phenomenal engineer. But we have extensive conversations that run into philosophy, religion, sociology, demographics, statistics, you know. And we tend to disagree, actually, but I love that he is dedicated to reason. You know, like he challenges myself and himself to really work out our reasoning. So we may not agree, we may not come to the same conclusions, but if we both show each other our working, then we respect where we're both coming from. And I think I've grown in my rhetoric from just having interactions with him. There are people that I would love to recommend, but I know they've already been recommended. I'm just going to reel off some names, but they're not really kind of on my list. Tarkov, Spake, Scat Girl, Red Queen Coder, you know. But I'd also like to recommend Jacaranda Chick, right? And she's based in the UK. She's a startup entrepreneur. And, you know, sometimes the app.net community can be a little too tech heavy. It's nice to have people who approach things, they're still involved with technology, with startups, with business and things like that, but who aren't defined by being tech first people. They have a broader perspective or a different perspective, an orthogonal perspective. And she's also a fan of Chelsea FC, which, as a Manchester United fan, is a sign of my gregarious generosity of spirit that I would recommend such an individual. And lastly, I'd like to recommend Clark Gobel. I think Clark is a very, very smart, interesting person. And one of the things that I enjoy, even though I don't really pay attention to 90% of them, is that he posts a ton of political links. He and John Gordon post a lot of links to current affairs, developmental issues, socioeconomical and political issues. A lot of New York Times and New Yorker and Atlantic and Washington Post and Wonk blog issues. And these are people with whom you can really get into the nitty-gritty of policy. Now, Clark is a conservative and I'm a liberal. Clark is actually a Republican. I am independent, but I lean towards the Democratic Party here in the U.S. And I would like to consider him a fast friend of mine. So again, this is someone I don't necessarily agree with on things, but our conversation is rooted in respect and rooted in rhetoric, in the clarity of showing your reasoning. And I think that has also made me a smarter, better, more well-rounded individual. So those are three people I'd recommend, absolutely.
Well, thank you very much for those recommendations. There are certainly some interesting people in there.
Thank you very much.
And I'd like to thank you again for being my guest today on Discover ADN. And please share with us some links to your artwork when you publish it online. I look forward to seeing them.
I look forward to seeing it too. Thank you so much, Jason.
This concludes the 14th episode of Discover ADN. Once again, I would like to thank Olushi for taking the time to chat with me. Show notes for today's episode can be found online at discoveradn.10centuries.com. That's the number 10, centuries.com. And I would also like to thank our sponsor for this episode, Born Sequel. Have a nice day.